Tonight is Tu Bishvat, so we'll start with something to do with Tu Bishvat. I saw in a sefer, I think it was a B'nai Yisoschar, who says that there's a connection between Tu Bishvat and Tu B'Av. The Gemara says that the world was created at one of two times. Rabbi Lezer says the world was created in Tishrei, and Rabbi Yeshua says the world was created in Nisan. The truth is that it was neither created in Tishrei or Nisan, but man was created on the first day of Tishrei or the first day of Nisan. And the world was created 6 days earlier on the 25th day of Elul or the 25th day of Adar. All of this does not apply this year because of leap year. A normal year. So, thank you. So, okay. So the world was created either on the 25th day of Adar or the 25th day of Elul. It says that before a person is born, before he's conceived, really, 40 days before the conception of a person, Arboim Yom Kodim Yetziras Havlad, the Rabban Hashem already starts to prepare for that person's creation. Okay, and who his shidduch is going to be, what his acquisitions are going to be, and so on. Arboim Yom Kodim Yetziras Havlad. Says the B'nai Yisoschar, when the world was created, it was the same thing. Before God conceived the world, right, he prepared for it 40 days before. What is 40 days before the 25th day of Adar? Tu Bishvat. And what's 40 days before the 25th day of Elul? Tu B'Av. So there's a connection. These are the dates of the preparation for the creation of the world. Now, one more point. Okay, that's what I saw. Now, the rest you can blame on me and take it with a grain of salt.
Why did he create it on the first? Why on...
What? No, because man was the major thing of creation, so the whole creation was created for the sake of man. So the culmination of creation took place on the first day of Tishrei, the first day of Nisan. Everything else was preparation for that. And this was the preparation for the preparation. Okay. Tosfos says that like in every argument in the Gemara, they're both right. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. So they're both right. The world was created in Nisan and the world was created in Tishrei. How could that be? Tosfos says, the world was created in Tishrei b'machshava, in thought, and in action it was created in Nisan. Now, you could take that literally, that God, thought about the world in Tishrei and actually created in Nisan, but I think it means something else completely different, what Tosfos means, that the world was created on two levels. One level is called the level of thought, and the other the level of action, meaning the following. It's simple Rashi, in the beginning of the Torah. The beginning of the Torah says, Bereshis bar Elokim, b'tchila ola b'machshava lehibaros b'midas hadin. Originally, God intended to create the world b'midas hadin, total justice, no mercy. And afterwards, he saw that it couldn't exist like that, that most people wouldn't be able to exist with total justice, so he added mercy. Okay. That means that the world of thought, meaning the first thought, the ideal, is a world of justice. And the lamaisa is a world of mercy and justice, justice tempered with mercy. Now let's first explain what that means. Why did God originally want to create the world only with justice and no mercy? Because God could have created us and put us in Olam Haba directly. He didn't have to create this world. And that would have fulfilled the purpose of creation, that God wanted to shower his goodness on a creation that he could have received that goodness. That goodness was a relationship with him eternally. And God could have created us, created Olam Haba, created that relationship, and that would have been it. Why did he create this world? That we should be able to earn and create that relationship instead of being given it on a silver platter, because what people receive for free, they don't appreciate as much as what they earn. And we've explained in the past that it's not just earning it, it's creating it. We create our relationship with God by what we do in this world. So therefore, originally, God created this world to exist only with justice, meaning you get exactly what you deserve, no help. And if you function properly, that's the greatest thing. Because then what you create for the next world is all yours. You didn't get any help. It's 100% your doing. You got what you deserve. That was the purpose of this world. But God saw that most people can't exist on that level. They need some kind of help. Therefore, he added mercy. But, says the Shaloh HaKadosh, that doesn't mean that God changed his mind. It means that God created the world on two dimensions. There's the dimension of total justice for those who can fit into that dimension. And there's the dimension of justice tempered with mercy for those who need that. The people who can exist with total justice, that's what's best. That was Rabbi Yaakov Avinu, Rabbi Akiva, individuals, huh?
How many people
really? Right, very few, very few. But that world was created and exists on that dimension for those individuals. For the majority of people, the Rabban Shem said, the world needs to be tempered with mercy, and they still earn, but they get a little help along the way. So, therefore, both worlds exist. The world exists on one dimension of, the world was created on one dimension called justice, another dimension called mercy, or tempered with mercy. Now, those two dimensions existed. Hold on, you can ask questions after, because if you break up the thought, you're going to lose the whole idea. Okay. So, those two dimensions had nothing to do with time, because time was also part of the creation. So when God created the world, there were two dimensions that were concurrent. A dimension of the world that was called b'machshava, the initial thought, and the lemaisa. Those two dimensions gravitated to different time slots when time was created. The dimension of justice gravitated to the time of Tishrei. That's called, it was created b'machshava, the original thought. And the dimension of mercy gravitated to the time of Nisan. So we have two creations of the world. Not it was created different times. It was created on two dimensions, which happened to then gravitate to two different times of the year. Tishrei obviously represents the time of justice, the day of Din, Yom HaDin, day of judgment. Tishrei is a time of Din. And it's represented by the name Tishrei. Because whenever you have the Aleph Beis backwards, it represents Din. Don't ask me why, that's just the way it is. Okay? I didn't make that up. That's part of Kabbalah, which I don't know too much about Kabbalah. I know this is true. So Tishrei is Tav Shin Reish, is backwards Aleph Beis. On the other hand, Rachamim is when you have the Aleph Beis in order. What is Chodesh Ha'aviv, right? Nisan is one of the only months that has a name to it, Aviv. Aviv is Aleph Beis. So Aviv is the month of Rachamim, and Tishrei is the month of Din. Okay, that's the case. Then you have Tu B'Av, preparing for the Rosh Hashanah of Din, and Tu B'Shvat, preparing for the Rosh Hashanah of Rachamim. Now there's another connection between Tu B'Shvat and Tu B'Av, and that is they both have to do with trees. Tu B'Av, according to one opinion in the Gemara, celebrates the Siyum of cutting wood for the altar for the year. They only cut the wood in the summer when the trees were dry and worms didn't grow in the wood, because wormy wood was not kosher to be used to burn on the altar. So they wanted to make sure there was no worms, so they only took the wood when it was dry and free of the sap in the summer. The sun's rays start to get weaker on Tu B'Av, and that's when the nights start to get longer and the days start to get shorter. At that point, they stop cutting wood. It was the cutoff point. And they made a siyum. Like we always make a siyum when you finish something, they made a siyum of cutting wood for the altar. So Tu B'Av has to do with trees, but cutting them down and burning them. Dry wood trees. Eitzim. Right? Eitzim means wood. It refers to the tree in the way that it is configured with its bark and its branches. It has nothing to do with the fruit. Because even cut down wood, lumber is also called eitzim, wood. Tu B'Shvat has to do with trees too, but here it has to do with the fruit-bearing quality of the trees. Therefore, it's Rosh Hashanah le'ilanos, not Eitzim, Ilan. An Ilan is a fruit-bearing tree, even though they're Ilan Eishrak, but the Gemara says that all Ilan Eishrak will bear fruit in the future. So they are potentially fruit-bearing trees. So Ilan is a word that represents Ilanos, fruit-bearing trees, the fruit-bearing quality of the tree, and Eitzim is more the configuration, the material of the tree, the wood. Now, there's another connection here. So let's see how cutting down trees and burning them on the altar prepares a person for the what's it called, the Rosh Hashanah of justice and judgment, and how dealing with the fruit of the tree, right, has to do with, and it's interesting also, this one has to do with fire, and this one has to do with water, because what's Tu B'Shvat? When the water goes into the tree as sap and starts to produce the fruit from that year's rain supply. So this is trees with water, this is trees with fire. Fire is always a symbol of justice, water is a symbol of mercy. So it also fits. But there's another connection, and that is the following. The word eitz, okay, it says, the Maral says, the Gemara says, that there is a connection between people and trees. Ha'adam eitz ha'sadeh. The Torah compares people to trees. So the Maral says the connection is a very graphic one. In other words, a person is built like a tree. Okay, how so? We have limbs, we have a root, okay? The only thing is that really, we would really look more like a tree if we were standing on our head, upside down. Then you'd look like a tree, right? And once I remember, I was originally in public school, I was in, I think it was second or third grade, and they had a play for Thanksgiving. And my part was to be a tree. I didn't have anything to say. I just had to stand there with my hands in the air, with a brown suit, and look like a tree. So, but you look more like a tree if you stood on your head, with your limbs extended, right? Your arms and your legs up, and your head down. That would be more like a tree than standing on your legs, which is standing on your limbs and your root up. Says the Maral, we're not an upside-down tree. We're only an upside-down tree in this physical world. Because in the physical world, our root is really rooted in the heavens. A person's root is in the spiritual world. So we grow down from the heavens. So we're really a right-side-up tree, except you have to understand where our root is. The root is in the heavens. So if you look from that perspective, we're the right-side tree. But the trees are rooted in the ground in the physical world. So their root is down, but our root is up. That's the Maral. With that, I want to say, if you take the word eitz and you enunciate the letters, you get words. Ayin, tzaddik. Now, even though the letter tzaddik is not tzaddik, it's sadi, but it represents a tzaddik. So if you read the letters of the tree, it says ayin. Ayin can mean look. Ayin, right? Tzaddik, and you'll see a tzaddik. Look at the tree, you'll see a tzaddik. How do you look at a tree and see a tzaddik? You look at the tree, you see what the limbs are. Those are the secondary thing. You can cut off the limbs, the tree will still exist. And look where the root is, that's the main thing. You cut off the root, there's no more tree. Look at a tree, you'll see that the root is in the ground, and the limbs extend up. If you look at a person, you see his root is in the heavens. And his limbs extend down. So you know what's the ikkar of a person. The ikkar of a person is his spiritual side, not his physical side, because the root is rooted in the heavens. So look at a tree, and you'll see a tzaddik. If you transfer what you see in a tree, limbs and root, and understand what's the main and what's the secondary, and then look at a human being and see where his root is and where his limbs are, then you'll know that what's it called, that he's what a tzaddik is. We've said in the past, I'll do this very quickly and just mention one or two examples, that therefore it would seem that if a person was in a spiritual world, then he would be on his head. It's only that we're on our feet in this physical world because we're growing down from the heavens. But if we'd be up there, then we'd be a tree that's right side up, meaning our head would be down and our limbs would be up, just like a tree. Because there would be rooted in the spiritual world. And I found a Medrash that says that. The Medrash says that the first time that Rivka saw Yitzchak Avinu, her groom, she fell off the camel. So the Medrash says, what was so astounding? It says that Yitzchak Avinu, after the Akedah, he actually died. His neshama fled him when he saw the knife coming, and God resurrected him. But he needed shikum. He had to be rehabilitated. So God put him into Gan Eden for 3 years to rehabilitate him. And he came out of Gan Eden at the moment he was emerging from Gan Eden that Rivka saw him for the first time. And the Medrash says, and is well known, people in Gan Eden walk on their heads. And he was still walking on his head. So when Rivka saw her chassan for the first time, she saw he was walking on his head, she fell off the camel. Somebody told me she wanted to get on her head to be a nice kala. Right? He's on his head, I'll be on my head too. So you see from there, in the spiritual world, people really walk on their head. And there is an idea in Hasidus, in Kabbalah, of regular mala. There was even a group of Hasidim that the whole day ate, drank, and partied, and made somersaults. That to show that their feet are up and their head is down, and they're really what's it called, an upside-down tree. In any case, and there are many other instances where we see this idea. Shmuel HaNavi, when the Machashefa brought him up from the dead, he came up upside down. Because in that world, that's how people are, upside down. There are other cases. In any case, the opposite of that is that when you want to maintain, therefore, a spiritual posture in this world, and you want to show that my root is not my leg. I'm only on my legs because my root is growing from the heavens. So you want to make it clear that this is my root, even though it's up there, and this is my limb, even though it's down there. What do? We take off our shoes, and we cover our head. Because the limbs are uncovered, and the root is covered. So in order to show that this is the root, we cover it, and we uncover our feet, we take off our shoes, and that's when we have a spiritual posture. When you go to the Beis HaMikdash, you take off your shoes and cover your head. And Ovel, who wants to get closer to the spiritual world, to commensurate with the Neshama, takes off his shoes and covers his head. And on Yom Kippur, we take off our shoes, cover our heads. All of that is part of showing this posture. This is the root, that's the limb. The only thing is that in this world, the root has to be up because we're rooted in the spiritual world. Okay. That is the idea of looking at the configuration of a tree. Therefore, to prepare for judgment, nobody can possibly merit judgment. Can't merit in the judgment. So how do you merit judgment? By totally giving yourself over to God in God's hands. God, I trust you. Whatever you do, I know is fair. I'm giving myself over to you in judgment. That's the way to be zoche, to merit in judgment. Totally subjugate yourself to God. Put yourself in his hands. So therefore, you take a tree, which represents a tzaddik, right? The configuration of the tree, the limbs, the root. You cut it down, you cut it into little pieces, and you burn it on the altar. That is the symbol of how to merit judgment. Take the person, break him down, subjugation, subdued, totally subjugated to God, burning on the fire of the altar. That's how you prepare for the Rosh Hashanah of judgment. That's Tu B'Av. Now the other way. Ilan. So this is something that hit me one day I was driving in my car, and it's very, very interesting. Okay. Take the word Ilan. Take away the Aleph, put it in your pocket. Okay, you have three letters left. Yud, Lamed, and Nun. Okay? Add those letters up numerically. Yud is 10, Lamed is 30, is 40, Nun is 50, is 90. What letter in the Aleph phase is 90? Tzadik. Now take the Aleph out of your pocket and put it back. What do you have? Aleph, Tzadik, eight. Ilan becomes an eight, except not with an ayin, with an Aleph. Aleph, Tzadik. It's an eight. An eight with an Aleph. Same thing, Ilan. If we said ayin Tzadik means look at the tree and you'll see a Tzadik, then Aleph Tzadik means learn about the tree and you'll see a Tzadik. Because the Aleph means to learn. Right? In Aramaic, it says that. Yoli. But a'alefcha, the Gemara, it's the pasuk in Navi, a'alefcha means to teach, to learn. In modern Hebrew, iluf means to train, right? Iluf klavim is training dogs or whatever. So the word alef means to teach, to learn, whatever. Yolif, right? Learn. Aleph bina, learn wisdom. That's what the aleph stands for. So therefore, the, what's it called? The Aleph Tzadik, the Ilan, which becomes Aleph Tzadik, means learn about the tree, you'll see what a Tzadik is. So we explain how looking at a tree can tell you what a Tzadik is. Look at the limbs, the roots, see which is which, where the root is by a person, so on. How do you learn about a tree? So we've explained the past, and we'll do this condensed because I want to get something from the parasha. And that is that tree, this, we're talking about the fruit. Fruit is a symbol of the philosophy of Torah philosophy of this world. This world is the place where you put in the effort to produce the fruit of Olam Haba. The Meiri says that Olam Haba is not a separate world. It's the fruit of this world. Here you plant the seeds, you water, you fertilize, you prune, and you reap the fruit in the next world. It's your doing. You created that fruit. That's one philosophy of life. This world is put in effort, you'll benefit, you'll reap the profits in the future. The other philosophy of life is immediate gratification. Right? Enjoy yourself. The one who has the most toys when he dies wins. Right? The purpose of the world is to amass pleasure, and that's it. It's an end in itself. Those are the two philosophies of life. Esav represented the hunter, go into the forest, kill the animal, enjoy it. Yaakov represented a shepherd, you raise the animal, you put a lot of work in for a future benefit. Yaakov is v'hoya ekev, what the end result will be. Esav is also finished. Everything, immediate gratification for now. Okay. So therefore, looking at the fruit represents a philosophy of this world of put in effort now for the future. If you remember, we spoke about a medrash where Avram Avinu was looking for a place to settle before God told him to go to Eretz Yisrael, and he saw Chutz La'aretz, people eating, drinking, and partying, and he said, this is not for me. Came to Eretz Yisrael, people were planting, plowing, harvesting, this is for me. What did he see different? He saw that in Chutz La'aretz, the atmosphere, the environment, is conducive to eat, drink, and be merry. And in Eretz Yisrael, the environment, even for Goyim, even for idol worshippers, is put in effort now for the future. Their future was reaping the fruit in this world. But for his children, he knew that it would be for the future. Even the non-Frum Jews who came here, the early years, weren't looking for immediate gratification. They were draining the swamps and building up a country for the future. Not for themselves. As opposed to people who came to America in the early, were looking to, you know, take the gold off the streets and become rich all overnight. So the atmosphere here is conducive to a philosophy of put in effort now for the future, which is a Torah philosophy. The atmosphere in Chutz La'aretz is the opposite. That doesn't mean that you can't fight against the environment. There are plenty of people who fight against the environment in Chutz La'aretz, have beautiful Torah communities. And there are plenty of people here who fight against the environmental influence and have terrible lifestyles. They fight against it. But if you go with the tide, here the environment will bring you to the right philosophy. There the environment will bring you to the wrong philosophy. And that's what it is. That's what the difference is between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz in its essence, in the air. Avira de Eretz Yisrael Machin, there's something in the air here that can conducive to that kind of philosophy. So that's the philosophy of fruit. Fruit represents put in effort now, you won't get any enjoyment. That's Orla. First 3 years, you can't even enjoy the fruit. You have to wait till it's fit to use to serve God. Wait, put in effort, there's a future thing. That's the whole idea of fruit. So the Ilan represents this idea. Aleph Tzadik. Learn about the fruit-bearing quality of the tree. And if you learn about the concept of fruit, you'll know what a tzaddik is. A tzaddik is a person who's willing to put in a lot of effort now for a future benefit, the future being the world to come. Okay. Now the Torah gave us four mitzvahs to do with fruit in Eretz Yisrael, four basic kinds of mitzvahs with trumas and maestras that bring home this message. In other words, the basic idea, the global idea is fruit. Put in effort, not immediate gratification. But in order to really understand that lesson, you need four different kinds of mitzvahs. The first one is truma. Truma, and there's others, bikurim is similar to this, or whatever, challah. You take the first. Truma is called reishis. You take the first and you dedicate it to God. I have this basic philosophy that it's kedai to put effort in for a future benefit. But how does that pan out? Take the first and dedicate them to God. The first sets the pattern for everything that comes after it. So if I take my first grain, the truma, and I give it to the Kohen, and it becomes holy, I understand that my purpose in this world is to dedicate everything towards God, and the foundation and the root, I dedicate totally, and everything after that, I'm going to use for some godly purpose. That's the first mitzvah that helps to enhance this concept of the fruit. Second kind of mitzvah is Maaser Rishon. Tenth, take off a tenth. The tenth represents the goal. The first represents what the foundation is. The tenth represents the goal. Why? Because until number 10, all the numbers are separate. 10 unites all the numbers into one unit, and then you build on that unit. The next number is not a new number. It's a chadesre, shteimesre. The 10, it's a decimal system. The 10 remains a unit. In Arabic numerals, same thing. 10 is 1, 10, and 0, 1. It's a unit of 10s. That's why a minion is 10. It represents the unity of many, many different things. God created the world, he was one. Then he created many things. The purpose of the world is all those many things should unite into one unity under God. That's the number 10. That's why the number 10 is Kodesh, Asiri Kodesh. That's why there's 10 Dibros and 10 Mamoros. The world was created based on 10, that everything should unite, all the many things should unite under God. That's what the number 10 represents. So you dedicate the first to God, and you dedicate the tenth, the goal to God. Now I have the hashkafa. I know that I have to dedicate everything to God, the first, the goal, and that's how I put in the effort in this world for the future fruit that I will reap in the world to come. Okay, now though, you have to know, it's very nice to have a nice hashkafa, you have to put it into practice. So next comes Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni, you don't give to a Kohen. You go take it to Yerushalayim and you eat it there. You can't eat it anywhere else but Yerushalayim. And the Torah says the reason. L'man tilmad l'yiras Hashem Elokecha. In order that you should learn to fear God. That's the purpose of Maaser Sheni. Tosa says, how do you learn to fear God? By eating Maaser Sheni Yerushalayim. Because in Yerushalayim were all the institutions of learning. The Beis HaMikdash was there. The Kohanim Leviim. So you got to see, right up hand, people really dedicated to God. All the Sanhedrin was in Yerushalayim, so all the big Talmidei Chachamim and Gedolim were there. All the yeshivas were there, Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah. So you went to Yerushalayim, you had to eat your Maaser, you had to spend a few days, weeks, eating up your Maaser in Yerushalayim. So you had nothing else to do, so you went to go into a yeshiva, you went to the Beis HaMikdash, you looked at the Kohanim, you saw the Sanhedrin people walking around, and you learned to fear God. You learned that Maaser Sheni is a learning process. Once you have the right hashkafos, right, you have the right perspective, you need to know how to use it. So you have to learn. Learn now how to dedicate things to God. You know now that it's important to dedicate the first and the goal. Now, how do you do it? So learn Torah, and you'll find out how to do it. And the last mitzvah is Maaser Ani. Right? In the off years, instead of Maaser Rishon or Maaser Sheni, you have to give Maaser Rishon or Maaser Ani. In the fourth and the third and the sixth year. Meaning that you have to know that you can't just worry about yourself. You have to worry about other people too. You have to support other people who can't support themselves. You can't just worry about your quest for Olam Haba. You have to worry about other people's quest for Olam Haba and help them out too. That is the complete picture of how to take that philosophy of fruit, and by doing these mitzvahs, you put it into a perspective, you dedicate the first and the tenth, and you learn how to actually do that, and you worry about other people too. Now, if we had to take letters that would represent these four kinds of mitzvahs, what would they be? Dedicating the first to God, what letter would represent that? Aleph. Dedicating the tenth to God. Learning about how to do this, Laman Tilmad Liro, which is Maaser Sheni, Lamed. No? Lamed is Lamed. And if you want to worry about people who can't support themselves, what's Maaser Ani? Nun. Why? Because it says that David HaMelech didn't put a Nun in Ashrei because Nun represents Nefila, falling. And that's why right after where the Nun should have been, right after the Mem, comes Someh Hashem L'chol HaNofli. God supports those that fall. That's why the central letter in Ani is a Nun. Because he can't support himself. He's falling. He needs support. So if you want to have a letter that represents supporting others who can't support themselves, the nun. What do those spell? Ilan. Aleph, Yod, Lamed, Nun. So the four letters of Ilan represent this whole concept of fruit. So Aleph, Tzadik. If you take the Yod, Lamed, Nun, put them all together, you get a Tzadik. The Aleph tells you to learn about the tree and you'll learn what a Tzadik is. If you learn about the concept of the fruit and you'll see in the Ilan the four mitzvahs that enhance that concept, you'll know what a Tzadik is. That's the way to prepare for Nisan. Nisan is, Rachamim is, God doesn't want us to just subdue ourselves and subject. He wants us to be dynamic. He gives us a hand, a helping hand. I want you to produce your fruit. I want you to be active and dynamic. And that's how to do that, through Torah. Torah is like water. The water goes into the tree and the tree produces its fruit. That's called mercy. That's the Rosh Hashanah of Nisan, which is Pesach. In fact, the word Pesach means to have mercy. We know it means to pass over, skip over, Pesach Hashem. But the Targum says Pesach means chos, God had mercy on us. So the whole idea of Nisan is mercy. Mercy means God's willing to give you a helping hand that you should produce. You should produce your fruit. So the way to prepare for the Rosh Hashanah of Nisan is Tu B'Shvat, is learning about trees and about fruit and about the water that goes into it and understanding how much you have to be active and dynamic, and God's going to help you to produce your fruit. That's the picture. Okay. One thing from the parasha, and then it says, what's it called? Yisro. The parasha is called Parshas Yisro, Seder of Yisro. Okay. Now, according to one opinion, Yisro came before the Torah was given. Okay, so he came after Kriyas Yamsu, before the Torah was given. It's there, okay. It fits in at least chronologically. According to one opinion, Yisro didn't come until after the Torah was given. So really, this is out of place. So according to either opinion, wouldn't it have been better if the rabbis divided the Sedras in such a way that the major historical occurrence for Klal Yisrael was the giving of the Torah, had its own Sedra? Don't tack it on the tail end of the beginning of the Sedra with Yisro coming and Yisro giving his advice, right? Give me a Sedra that's the Sedra of the giving of the Torah. Starts from Bachodesh HaShlish and ends with the giving of the Torah. And you could find seven Aliyahs in there, because on Shavuos we read that. You can find a way to what's it called to get seven Aliyahs. So why did Chazal see it that to put that part of Yisro and tack it on to the beginning of the Sedra that's to do with giving the Torah and not put it in the end of Bishalach and just finish up Bishalach with that and devote an entire Sedra that is exclusively the giving of the Torah instead of the tail end of Vayishma Yisro? So one idea, I think, is the following. The Zohar asks the following question. It says, Vayishma Yisro. Yisro heard. What did he hear? Kriyas Yamsuf and Melchemes Amalek. Okay. So the Medrash says, the Zohar says, V'chi Yisro levad shama? Yisro is the only one who heard this. V'hav kol ha'olam. Shomu ami rigoz. The whole world heard about Kriyas Yamsuf. So why does it say Yisro heard? It says because the whole world heard, but they didn't pay attention. And Yisro heard and he paid attention and made a difference and he came and joined the Jewish people. People can hear a lot of things. But if you don't hear that it's talking to you, then there's a big problem. Right? It's says that Kayim, when the Rabbanu Shalom gave him the first Musar Shmuz in history, after his sacrifice wasn't accepted and his brother's was, he was really upset. And God said, what are you so upset for? If you better your ways, then your sacrifice will be accepted too. You'll be also accepted. And if you don't better your ways, then you're to blame. Don't blame your brother. Everything's up to you. You both can be accepted. It's not you or him. So don't be upset. Do what's right. That was God's Musar Shmuz to Cain. Right after that it says, Vayomer Cain or Hevel Achiv. Cain said something to his brother Hevel. And then Vayi B'Yosef Masada, when they're out in the field, Cain killed Hevel. So the Medrashim say, it doesn't say what Cain said to Hevel. So there's many, many Medrashim that they were arguing about splitting up the world, who gets the Beis HaMikdash, who gets Eretz Yisrael. Big fights, and those fights led to Cain killing Hevel. Okay, that makes sense. The Ibn Ezra says, what's the simple meaning of the pasuk? Without any Medrashim, without anything more than what's there. What's the simple meaning? Simple meaning is that Cain told Hevel what God just told him. But that doesn't make sense. Because why would the Torah put that as the preface to them when they were in the field, Cain killed Hevel? If Cain told Hevel what God just told him, that should not have made him kill Hevel. That should have prevented him from killing Hevel. So where's the sequence? The answer, I think, is the following. When I was younger, I used to give my drushes in Miami, so I had people that really had to hear some mussar. But I was younger than them, and they were professionals, and I was a little intimidated with them. So I figured, you know what, I'm going to use my drasha as the vehicle to give these people the mussar, and I'm sure they'll get the message. So I didn't mention people's names or anything, or made it too specific, but if I had something to say that somebody did something in the kehillah that was wrong or whatever, so that Shabbos, I would make my drasha fit that thing, and I was sure the person got the message. Until, after davening, everybody came over to say good Shabbos, and the guy comes, who I was really targeting, right, but hopefully nobody really knew except for him, right, comes with a big smile, and I said, something's wrong. This guy's smiling like this, he obviously didn't get the message. He comes over and he says, Rabbi, you really gave it to them. Whoever needed that message, I hope they got it. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm sure they didn't, it was you. So I realized then that that's how people hear it. Right? You really gave it to them. You don't hear it me, you hear them. Right? That's that one exception I had to that in South Africa. South Africa is something that's an anomaly. It's not, that's what it is, yeah. That what's it called? It's what?
Anomaly.
Anomaly. Right? It's not normal for this world. In South Africa, they say that you can be Makarif people like in 3 seconds. All you have to do is say to them, didn't you ever hear about the Torah? No, what is it? I'm ready to do it. The tremendous, they have a different neshama there. I gave a shiur once there. What? Yeah, right. I once gave a shiur there. So at that time, maybe it's like that today too, they had, you know, everybody had a few servants in their home. So the women really had nothing to do. So if you gave a shiur on a Tuesday morning for women, 500 women showed up to the shiur. So I gave the shiur, 500 women, I couldn't believe it, right? 500 women of the shiur. And I was speaking about tznius. And I mentioned a certain style of clothing that even though halachically it may seem to be okay, but it's not really tzundua. All of a sudden, I get a note passed up to me, right, saying, Dear Rabbi Lev, I hope you'll forgive me, right, for coming dressed as I did. I really wanted to come to the shiur on time. I grabbed the first thing that I could. I usually do not wear this kind of dress, and I know that you were talking about me. So I apologize. Now, I'll tell you the truth. I did not inspect the dresses of all the women that were there, knew what anybody was wearing. I didn't know anybody there altogether. Zero. I surely wasn't referring to that woman. Here was the exception to the rule. Most of the cases, people hear mussar that apply to them and they say he gave it to them. This woman heard something that was just generic and she said it means me. That's a yotzei min haklal. That's what Cain did. Cain heard the mussar shmuz that God gave him. But he said, you know, it's a great word, but it can't be me. I don't need this. So there's only one other person who can possibly, I've got to go tell my parents. So he told his brother, hey, you know, God just told me something really nice. I really can't use it because it doesn't apply to me, but Mustama, you could take the mussar from it. Mustama, it applies to you. And since he told it over to his brother and didn't take it to heart and realized that God was talking to him, there it made no impression on him. And in the end, he ended up killing Hevel. Had he taken the mussar to heart, maybe he wouldn't have killed Hevel. That's the takdama to Matan Torah. God can speak himself blue in the face. He can come and speak to you and tell you Matan Torah face to face. But if you don't know how to listen, it's worthless. So the takdama to Matan Torah is Vayishma Yisro. First learned from Yisro how to hear. The whole world heard the same thing. Yisro heard that God was talking to him, and the whole world heard nothing like that. So if you want to prepare for the giving of the Torah, first learn from Vayishma Yisro, and then you'll be able to come to Anochi Hashem Elokecha. But if you don't learn from Vayishma Yisro, God can give you and come to Har Sinai and tell you Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and if you don't know how to listen, you don't know how to hear what's going on, it's going to be a waste of time. That's the Hagdama to Matan Torah.